all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or by going to veteransradio.net, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to veteransradio.net. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. We also want to thank our latest national sponsor, Veteran Lending Council. It is a community dedicated to educating lenders, realtors, and veterans on the VA Home Loan Benefit Program. You can check them out on Facebook and other social media outlets. As the officer of the deck, I'm going to take my prerogative, and I wanted to talk before we get into our interviews about a recent, and I think, you know, soon to be passed and become a law. Right now it's just a bill dealing with burn pit exposures. It's called Honoring Our Pact, P-A-C-T, Act. Honoring Our Pact Act. And the House has approved this. It's going back to the Senate for some revisions or technical adjustments. And then the president has already said that if it gets to his desk, he's going to sign it. What it would do is allow the 3.5 million or more veterans who have been exposed to toxic burn pit fumes to get treatment and benefits that they've earned from their service in Iraq and Afghanistan in particular. You're going to hear more about this if it passes. I'm sure we'll talk about it in the Veterans Benefit Hour with Veterans Radio. But think about it this way. Currently, more than 70% of disability claims related to burn pit exposures are denied by the VA due to lack of medical evidence and information from the Department of Defense. So this would make a big change where these become presumptive issues, and this toxic smoke, which really is a mix of things, would result in folks getting some VA health care. So still a little ways to go. We need some more clarification, but certainly a step in the right direction. And the other thing that's somewhat similar is there's a bill in the House to give PFAS exposed veterans presumptive health benefits. This was reintroduced by U.S. Representative Dan Kildee in March of this year. But PFAS is a kind of known as the forever chemical. They're the chemicals that are in long-time use by the military for firefighting foam, fluorinated AFFF, and again, as that moves forward, we'll be talking about it more on Veterans Radio. But I wanted to talk a little bit today about the Veteran Lending Council and some of the questions that might be raised by, is this a good time to go get a VA loan? I'll tell you that the VA loans are about 11% of mortgage applications in the United States. Bigger number than I thought. So there's a whole lot of folks using their VA loans, and sure, these higher interest rates have an impact on just home loans in general, but you might find this conversation with our friends at Veterans Lending Council of great interest. And that interest is whether or not you are buying, refinancing, upgrading, whatever you might be doing, there's probably a lot more flexibility than you realize. So listen in. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Eric Ensley and Andrew Cummings. They're both Army veterans. We'll talk about that a little bit. But they also have insight into VA home loans, both from a training standpoint and a lender standpoint, and then Andrew from a realtor standpoint. So let's start, Eric, let's start with you. You are affiliated with the Veterans Lending Council and an eight-year Michigan Army National Guard vet. Got to see a little real estate in Iraq and Afghanistan. You've been in the mortgage business for about 8 years now. But tell us about Veterans Lending Council and what that group is trying to do.
Sure. Well, thanks for having us, Jim. Like I said, my background prior to being a lender was I was an infantry guy with time in Iraq and Afghanistan. And what brought me to doing what I'm doing today is ultimately my experience when I came home from my first deployment and my lender talked me out of using the VA benefit. And it was basically just misinformation that she, you know, presumably was unaware that it was a repeat benefit that you could continue to use. And so I was told to save my VA benefit for my big boy house. I was buying a starter house. This was 2009. And the real estate market had just crashed and it was kind of chaotic. So I got put in the wrong loan program. As a disabled vet, the VA benefit, you can't mathematically beat it, as far as, in terms of other loan programs out there. So when I got out of the service, finished my degree and started looking for employment, I got into lending. After having my house for a few years, I learned that, I was paying mortgage insurance I shouldn't have been paying. I was paying a rate that I shouldn't have been paying because I have a benefit that I didn't know anything about. So I've made it my mission to help veterans understand their benefit. And then we took it a step further. And a year ago, we launched Veteran Mortgage Advisor, which is an arm of the Veteran Lending Council where we train loan officers. And we train them to train real estate agents so that together we can change the perception of VA loans in the marketplace. We want loan officers to be able to execute on the VA at the level that veterans deserve. And we want real estate agents to not buy into, the myths that are out there surrounding the VA, ultimately leading to, which veterans believing some of the myths out there. And then they don't realize that they're missing an opportunity by not using this benefit. So we set out about a year ago. We've had, several hundred loan officers through our online training platform. And, we do a couple live events every year. And so we're basically what I'm training people to do is to do exactly what I've done and get out in their marketplace and go to local real estate companies and train these realtors on how they can grow their business by helping more veterans, which is, a twofold benefit because obviously they're growing their benefit, their business. But at the same time, they're helping those who truly deserve it. I mean, there is just the amount of people who could be homeowners who just think they can't because they don't know how the programs work is astounding.
Well, it's a great mission, and Veterans Radio is glad to be bringing Veterans Lending Council and Veterans Mortgage Advisors to the wider public as part of its platform. And so what we have on also, we have Andrew Cummings, eight-year U.S. Army and National Guard veteran. He also looked at some real estate in Iraq and Afghanistan, thought the climate was a little too dry for him, came back to Michigan. And got into the real estate business. Drew, tell us a little bit about your background and your work in real estate and some training that you got regarding veteran home loan benefits.
Hey, absolutely. And as Eric said, thank you for having us on the program today. So I initially joined the Army around 2004. And I've got some time in Iraq and Afghanistan like Eric. Him and I actually served together, same battalion, and then same brigade later on in Afghanistan, both infantrymen. It was a great experience for me. It was just time for me to move on. And when I did, I got home from my second tour, and I decided that I was going to buy a house, my wife and I. And it worked out really well. We had a great realtor, thank God, that did understand the VA process. and then got into my home and was able to save. Man, the misinformation out there about VA loans is absolutely staggering, as Eric was saying. So, and it really starts with with loan officers and realtors. You know, the guys on the ground actually, you know, opening up doors for people.
Well, it's I keep referring to it as myth busting, because I kind of feel that's what Eric's team has to do regularly. And that's why when I saw a recent article in military.com that said, oh, geez, you know, VA home loans are leaving veterans outbid in hot housing market, comma, lawmakers warn. Now I'm really suspicious. This isn't really fact. This is a bunch of, you know, guys and gals in Congress beating up on VA. So some of the reporting deals with having to get VA appraisals and how much time it takes. You know, if you read this, you could see why there are misperceptions and myths that somehow VA financing is less desirable than conventional loans. And as what I know from you guys is that's just not the case. So what I want to hear maybe from your side on the realtor side, Drew, is are you seeing in a hot real estate market that the VA home process just doesn't work?
No, that's not it entirely. It's really what it is. It's miseducation on the part of a listing agent, to be completely honest, and realtors as a whole, I should say. What I see a lot of times is people have this misperception that a VA is like an FHA kind of a product, and it's really not. You know, when I have to sit down and talk to a realtor and explain to them how things really work, and they go, oh my gosh, kind of see that light bulb turn on above their head, so to speak. And they go, well, I had no idea. You know, I thought it was A, B, and C. And I go, yeah, I know. I go, that's the problem with our industry. It's just there's a lot of misinformation and disinformation out there. And I think, you know, a lot of people just think that the industry standard, it should be a conventional mortgage, and that's how it's going to be, and that's absolutely ridiculous. You know, why would a veteran go with a conventional product over a VA product when he could stand to save thousands upon thousands of dollars?
That myth is was reported in this article as part of the survey they did in 2021 by the National Association of Realtors, where 94% of sellers said they're more likely to accept an offer with a conventional financing compared to 1% who'd say they were more likely to accept an offer with a VA loan. I mean, just totally lopsided about if I accept an offer with a VA loan on it, how that process is going to go. I mean, that had to be kind of glaring when you read that, and you knew from doing deals, Drew, that isn't the case.
It's absolutely not the case, and I would say about half of my business on the buying side is absolutely veteran driven. You know what I mean? And it's just it's crazy, just staggering. You know, people think that when you show up with a VA loan, you submit that offer, that somehow your buyer is a weaker buyer than other people, and that's just not the case. They are entitled to that benefit, and they want to use that benefit in order to save them money. And in a lot of other circumstances, there are VA buyers that are way more qualified than some conventional buyers out there. I know Eric knows that, you know, to a T. I mean, he's got all kinds of statistics and facts that are out there. When I took his military mortgage boot camp class, I was just blown away when I, you know, found out all that stuff, and that was, gosh, 3 or 4 years ago.
Eric, I'm going to ask you to summarize that a little bit, because the point Drew's making is, and I think the survey reflected, is people think if you have the VA loan, oh, you must be a weaker buyer, but it really means you're a smarter buyer because you're going to save money. Talk about some areas where that veteran is a smarter buyer because he's saving money.
Sure. Well, Part of the problem is that the lending community as a whole has let down the veteran community. You have big box lenders who can't think outside of the box, quite frankly. The VA is a super flexible program that allows for really very involved, good decision making that can get creative as long as you can document your reasoning. So the VA it's set lenders up for success in that we can take liberties and get loans closed, but then you've got a lot of lenders that do really good at marketing themselves as VA specialists. And then at the end of the day, you know, if if one weird thing comes up, they don't dig into the guidelines to get the loan closed. They just deny the loan, and they've created this reputation that VA has a, you know, has a lower closing ratio. The other thing that, you know, that I would say as far as from a seller's perspective, if all things, you know, assuming obviously they don't know what I know as a lender, and they know the flexibility of the loan program, and they know that you theoretically, I mean, you could be a very weak buyer in theory buying using a VA loan. One thing, you know, I'll give some credence to is the conventional loan programs have, you know, they have pretty specific standards in terms of your debt to income ratio and your credit score. The VA has a lot of flexibility in those areas where if a lender wants to make the decision to write a loan, as long as they can document their reasoning, the VA will back them up. So in theory, yes, you could have somebody who doesn't qualify conventional that does qualify VA. And so they're not necessarily as strong of a buyer. However, those are the outliers. That's not the average. And the averages with VA, you know, VA buyers is that, you know, we have a median FICO score last year of 736 for the average buyer. We have a median household income of $90,000. I say household income because, you know, let's be clear, not all veterans make a ton of money. Some of us just marry really well. But the point is, you know, a $90,000 household income is a solid income. That's significantly above, say, an FHA, which is in the 60s, you know, and has a median credit score of 672. You know, so from the strength of the buyer's perspective, you know, when you look at the stats, the numbers show that if the VA buyer on average didn't have that VA benefit, they would absolutely be a conventional buyer. They fit that box. But why would they go that route if they don't need to? If they're putting less than 20% down, why would they want to pay mortgage insurance? And, you know, not to mention mortgage interest rates. Government rates are typically about a quarter better than conventional. So if you get talked out of using your VA benefit, you not only might have mortgage insurance, but additionally, you might have a higher rate than if you were going to VA. So the other aspect that I think lenders kind of drop the ball is if we issue a pre-approval letter and it just says, you know, Johnny Blue is qualified for this $400,000 home. And that's all it says is that they're qualified to buy it on a VA loan and it's zero down. The seller has no idea the strength of that buyer. So what we train loan officers to do is to, you know, try to make sure we're presenting and giving as much information as possible so that they know that this is not the FHA buyer. This is absolutely the conventional buyer, but they have the VA benefit. So they're going to use it because it's a benefit they've earned.
And one of the things that we've talked about before here on Veterans Radio with our friends from Veterans Lending Council is that you don't get the money from VA, right? It's not, it's not that FHA loan. It is a VA program. And they're backing the private sector bank that's making the loan. Do I have that right?
You have that right. The benefit that we have earned as veterans is that rather than having to pay for mortgage insurance to insure the bank in the event that we default, the VA loan has a guarantee from the VA. So in the event of a default, if the bank takes the house back and sells it at a loss, the VA guarantees that loss up to 25%. So that's the benefit we've earned, clear and simple. What people misunderstand is, like you said, they think that it goes to the VA. They think that it's a government, you know, it's a government organization doing your loan. It's not. It's, you know, 99% of lenders across America are direct lenders with direct underwriting authority from the VA, meaning nothing goes to the VA until after the file is closed. Somebody goes closing, or we underwrite the file in-house, we close on the loan, the veteran's happy, the loan then goes to the VA for the guarantee, but that's after the fact. As a home buyer, you never know that that took place. That's after the fact. But people get confused because there are other programs like, let's say, rural development that does go to the office of USDA for approval during the loan process. All right, so it gets underwritten at a lending company and then sent to USDA, which might add another week to your timeline. Or here in Michigan, we have a first-time home buyer grant benefit it's called MISHTA, and that goes to Lansing. After it's been underwritten by the lender, it goes to Lansing for their stamp of approval. So that can add time to your loan process. But for VA, it's, you know, again, we have direct underwriting authority. So if I brought in two loans on the same day, conventional and VA, It's the exact same process. I'm bringing in, you know, gathering all the documents, submitting it to my underwriters. My underwriting team is sending it back to me. If there are conditions, I reach out, get those conditions, resubmit for final approval. There, as far as the underwriting is concerned, the only difference is that we have, you know, the one underwriter has to be certified by the VA as opposed to conventional, which is, you know, obviously does not. But it's,
this
it's
can
not
be,
going to a different place.
Yeah, this can be really confusing for the individual, and we're talking here about a veteran who's buying a home. And that's why you turn to professionals like realtors who guide you through this process, and they're worth every penny. And they work with lenders who know what they're doing. And you, again, if you don't have a realtor who understands it, he's not going to get you, or she's not going to get you to a lender who understands it. And is that kind of what you see, Drew, that the veteran you're working with who's trying to buy or, a home is really relying on you guys as professionals?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct, and I'd kind of like to a caveat to that. Not trying to talk trash to some of the professionals, or I should say non-professionals in my industry, but there are quite a few people that do not need to have a license to practice real estate. The standards are just not there. So what happens with that is people, you know, they get a real estate license, they think they're going to get rich quick, right? And they figure out very, very quickly that this is a tough business to break into. And they figure out, man, there's nobody here that's, you know, overseeing this. I'm my own boss. So, you know, a lot of times people just drop the ball when it comes to education, especially with VA stuff. It's just, it's abhorrent. I mean, I most of my business is listings. And you know, I will take a VA offer any day. You know, I don't discriminate, so to speak, like a lot of other ones do.
Well, it's got to be frustrating at your end when you run into somebody who, you know, usually if you're on the buyer side, there's also somebody over on the seller side and vice versa. It's got to be frustrating when the guy or gal on the other side, you just know they don't know it. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, no, you're absolutely correct, and it's just you know, kind of the blind leading the blind, so to speak, in that aspect. Yeah.
Well, I got both of you guys here, and before we run out of time, which, you know, goes really fast here, I wanted to come up and talk about another issue because, as I said, when we started this, it was this Congress is looking into this, and there's all this frustration, and I'm looking at it thinking, I'm not sure they're focused on the right folk. The frustration maybe shouldn't be at VA. But since this article came out, life has changed a lot for all of us as the Fed rate on interest rates have just bumped up again. And so with inflation and rising mortgage rates, Eric, let me start with you. From where you sit with the Veterans Lending Council and understanding the lending business, do you see the value of the VA home loan program increasing in these kind of times, or decreasing, or staying the same?
Well, I would say, it's already a benefit if you purchase a home in the last 3 years, in the last 20 years, quite frankly, because anybody that had a mortgage in the last 3 years likely refinanced to something historically low. And one benefit that we have as veterans on VA loans is that our loan is assumable. So as mortgage rates go up, we are in uniquely positioned to sell our house for a higher price than our neighbor, because we can sell, I can sell my home with my mortgage, and I can have another veteran come in and assume my mortgage, or I could, you know, I could go to a, sell to a civilian who doesn't have the VA benefit, and they can assume it as well. I would prefer if it went to another veteran so I get my entitlement restored, but I won't go off into the weeds on that.
Well, we're going to talk about that another time. I just made a note. Yeah. Okay, next month we're talking about assumability. Yeah. But go back to this. Let's go back to this issue of rising rates and things.
Yeah, so as far as rates are concerned, I mean, they're projected to continue to go up. So it would, you know, it would continue to further my belief that the VA loan is the right loan program to be in, because you are going to get a little bit better in rate on average with a VA than you would with conventional. But beyond that, I mean, the flexibility of the VA loan in terms of debt to income ratio is easier to qualify on a VA loan. You know, your buying power is a lot more. as home prices have skyrocketed, it, you know, as a zero down loan benefit, we are not having to keep up with, you know, saving for a down payment. You know, if you were trying to save for 20% down to avoid mortgage insurance on a conventional loan, if it took you a year to do that, you lost out on 18% appreciation in the market. And I think the appreciation, while I don't think it's going to continue at that rate, I do think home prices are going to continue to go up. So I would rather, you know, anything I can do right now, if I'm a home buyer, to get into a home, I'm doing it because home prices are going to continue to go up. And like I keep seeing, across the social media spheres, you're not buying, you might be buying your forever home, but you're not likely buying your forever mortgage.
Right.
And I would agree with that. I think if you can lock in a home price now, you will be happy that you've done so. If you plan to buy in the next 4 years, I think now is the right time because the supply and demand issue is not going to be solved anytime soon. As far as rates go, you know, rates can either do three things, right? They could go up, at which point you'll be glad you bought now. They could stay the same, at which point you'll be glad you bought now because home prices are going to continue to go up. Or they could go down, at which point you'll just take advantage of the rate at that time using the VA interest rate reduction loan, which is an awesome benefit that you have if you've already, you know, purchased a home out of VA loan. So, yeah, I mean, the benefits are there. The VA is hands down the best opportunity for you to lock in the price of your housing. Because if you're sitting on the sidelines waiting for prices to change or rates to change, I can tell you what's definitely changing: rent prices, and they're not going down.
Right. Yeah, the alternative. Right. Drew, let me ask you the same sort of question in this volatile environment, increasing prices, increasing rates. How do you view the VA home loan program going forward? Do you think you'll be using it more, less, the same?
I'm hoping to be using it more. I always encourage a veteran to use their entitlement. These are definitely trying times, and there's a lot of speculation. There's a lot of fear mongering out there. You know, the last 3 years, all I've heard is the market's going to crash, but there's still people out there that still need to buy a home. You know what I mean? So I see it staying the same right now. Hopefully, you know, with this education bit, we can just continue to, enlighten other lenders and other realtors to what the VA has to offer for a veteran as far as the VA home loan is concerned. So I just going to keep plugging away at it. You know, I just bottom lined a deal for, almost a $600,000 house in the Brighton area, you know, and it's a VA deal. And I think we had 12 other offers that we were competing against. But it, really what it came down to was just educating that listing agent. You know, hey, this is what we're bringing to the table. This is why my guy's using a VA loan. And then he goes, oh, man, that's incredible. And oftentimes sellers are, you know, they want to sell their home to a veteran, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for your service.
Absolutely.
Kind of a thing.
Yep.
So it's worked out great.
Well, I appreciate Andrew Cummings, a licensed realtor in the Milan area who's helping educate people and utilizing their VA benefits, for spending a little time with Veterans Radio. And Eric Ensley, as always, we're glad to have Veterans Lending Council on Veterans Radio so you can educate the general public. And you've given me three good ideas for our next meeting or two. Certainly the assumability of the loan, the VA rate reduction loan you mentioned I haven't heard about before, and this locking in the benefit issue is interesting as well with increasing pricing. So this is the zero down portion of it and how that impacts things. So, Eric, again, thank you for spending some time with Veterans Radio. But we got so much more to talk about, but we'll do it again next time.
All right. Thanks so much for having us, Jim.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Jim.
Well, I certainly found it exciting to talk with these guys and learn more about the VA loan program. We've got more things to learn, and we plan on bringing that to you on Veterans Radio. But before we go on to our next discussion on women in defense, let's have a few words from our sponsors.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. Even small actions can make a world of difference. If you know a veteran in crisis, please call the Veterans Crisis Line, 800-273-8255. 800-273-8255. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We also want to thank our sponsors that are VSOs, the Vietnam Veterans of America, Charles S. Kettles Chapter, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423, and American Legion Prescorn Post 46, all in Ann Arbor. If your local VSO wants to get involved with Veterans Radio, hook us up at veteransradio.net. You can reach out to us. We'd be glad to have some more VSOs on as sponsors. We're going to talk about women in defense. And I'm not talking about women who are in the military, although there's certainly a connection there, but women who are involved in the defense industry. But this is a very exciting career opportunity for women on all fronts, and obviously an important part of where they can serve the country. So listen in. I think you'll find this interesting. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Carrie Mead. She has a very interesting story and career and is the immediate past president of Women in Defense, the Michigan chapter. So we're not only going to hear about her experiences, but she's going to put in context for us this organization, Women in Defense. Carrie, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hey, thanks, Jim. I'm so grateful to be here and have a chance to talk about women in defense and all the different careers that women can explore in this area.
Well, we have some mutual friends, and we just got done talking about those women. And so I think this is a great opportunity for our veteran radio listeners to hear the voice of and experiences of somebody who's made an interesting career working with the U.S. Army. But it really starts way far back. As I just told you, I'm going to ask you, how did a nice girl like you, with a bachelor's of sociology from the University of Michigan, end up in Army management?
Oh goodness! Well, it all starts with this kind of story, Jim, that I fell in love with a boy in the Army.
Oh, there you go.
So, yeah, I had had finished my undergraduate degree and was pretty set that I was ready to go to law school, and moved myself down to Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and had myself on the track. And then I figured out that cute boy that I had dated during the summer was not too far away from me in Port Jackson down in South Carolina. And after a couple weeks and his assignment at Port Carson in Colorado, I gave him a call and I'm like, you know, I was going to come visit you over Christmas. You want to get married? And he said, okay. So
there you go.
Yeah, that's where things went off the rails immediately. So, but you know, what a interesting and fun life I've had to lead, and not always according to my own plan, which has made it even more, enriching.
Well, you did some work for the American Red Cross. You picked up a master's in nonprofit management. And somewhere along the line, you got yourself as a civilian employee in the U.S. Army, I think the Garrison Detroit Arsenal first. But walk us through that, because now you're a big shot. Why don't we start with that? Tell folks where you are now at Joint Base Meyer-Henderson Hall.
Great. Yeah, I'm actually serving on a great detail assignment right now with this crew here at the Joint Base Meyer-Henderson Hall, working as the chief of staff for the garrison here. You know, we do all the support to Army Family Housing, to the Old Guard. We provide support to our partners on our fence line here at Arlington National Cemetery. And it's, a great joy to provide for the safety and security of the folks here, as well as get after all those things we do to take care of soldiers and their families.
And this is, as you say, a detail that you've just started. And prior to that, I believe you were the garrison manager for the U.S. Army Garrison Detroit Arsenal as a full-time position. Tell us what being at the U.S. Army Garrison in Detroit was all about.
Great. Well, so, the U.S. Army Garrison in Detroit, we always say if you've been to one installation, you've been to one installation. But Detroit's really kind of a unique location. What we've done in Detroit is I served there as the garrison manager, and we've civilianized the command billet. So probably one of, like, you know, one of the, I call it my neat party tricks, is I'm one civilian in the Army who can give out coins, right? Because I serve in like a command billet. And we do the same things there. You'll find kind of a standard set of services at Army garrisons across the world. But our mission is a little bit different in Detroit in that we don't have kind of the same focus. We don't have military housing. But we have some interesting partnerships, right? We do a lot of our family morale, welfare, recreations in partnership with Selfridge Air National Guard Base. So while we serve in Detroit Arsenal there in Warren, you know, we also run activities out at Selfridge, like a golf course and a child care center and a marina and some different things to help support our military community.
And that's really the key to all of this, is it's that support role. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, for sure. You know, that garrisons across the military installations are like little cities, right? We liken ourselves to being city managers. So, you know, that support comes in many ways. So in Detroit, I always say we support those who support our soldiers, our families, and our civilians that, you know, do amazing things for our warfighters, right? Procure and design all sorts of excellent things. And the way that we provide that support is just like you would get maybe from your local municipality. So think of public works, police and fire and emergency services, social services, parks and recreation, all those things that you would expect to receive from, you know, the city or the municipality that you live in are things that we deliver on Army installations on a daily basis.
And in that role, you're involved in contracting for, say, mental health services or other social services or education for school-aged kids.
You know,
talk to us a little bit about that, if you would, Carrie.
Sure, yeah. You know, some of the great things that we do. So we all have employee and assistance offices. So, you know, trained social workers on our staff who are really kind of a triage, right? And I know you talked about contracting, but I'll tell you, we have some amazing partners that help support us with, you know, with providing those services in our local communities, right? And that's how local communities can help their military installations. Just reaching out and figuring out where there's those great touch points to support that community come to play. So, you know, we work with a number of different organizations outside the gate, locally, you know, I'll call the Care Out as one of those organizations. They assist us and are really active in helping us with our domestic violence and child abuse prevention programs. So much so that almost on a monthly basis, they're offering prevention training for us as our partner, right, and to our local military families. You know, the other things that you'll see, at, you know, Army Child Care is premier, right? There's great child care programs, accredited programs, because we know when soldiers feel that their families are taken care of, that they are, you know, can more confidently go about doing their job, right? So we get after doing things for them, like making sure we're providing quality childcare all the way from 6 weeks to kids who are graduating from high school, right? We have a great middle school and teen program as well. Other ways that we support our military families, right? We have a Greater Army Community Service Office. We do financial readiness and planning for our soldiers. Also for our civilians, right? It's important for us to keep our civilian workforce in good financial track, right?
Yeah, because absolutely.
A lot of our folks who, you know, especially those who carry security clearances, that's an important part of keeping your, and we call it security clearance hygiene, right? Making sure that you're taking care of and cleaning up things is making, you know, making sure your finances are in order. So that's been a great program for both our soldiers and our civilians on post.
Well, we're talking to Carrie Mead, who's the acting chief of staff at Joint Base Meyer-Henderson Hall, about women in defense and her career and sort of the interesting things that are done on the civilian side to support the Army in this instance. But I wanted to point out to folks, too, many of our military members would be aware of the professional military education that they go to, and even maybe all the way up to War College. There's something similar over on the civilian side, a staff college that you participated in. Can you just tell us a little bit about the Army's work to make sure that civilian workforce is equally up to speed and educated on these issues?
Yeah, no, it's awesome, Jim. There's a very concerted effort on the civilian side of the house for the Army to set up kind of a parallel training program for our workforce, right, to get them through and give them the leadership skills that they need, right, to move on and move up in our organizations. You know, just like you would board for for a promotion. We go kind of by grade on the civilian side of the house, and there's an Army Career Management Staff College that offers their civilian education system training, and they start at a basic level, right, for some of our incoming graded folks, intermediate and advanced level, and then some continuing education classes that they offer as well. And what that really does is much like military training that will take you away to a school for a little bit. These programs are often between 2 and 4 weeks long, kind of get you out of the seat that you've been sitting in and help you sit somewhere else and see the world a little bit differently. So those are all handled out at Fort Leavenworth, and it's they're actually just as you would try to get promoted within the military side of the house. They're wickets that you need to collect in order to kind of move on and move up in the civilian sector as well.
And it's an interesting because I think most military members don't think much about that support and the level of civilian support they get, because obviously they're so focused on their training and what they're doing on their assignments on the military side. But I'm, talk a little bit about being a civilian employee to the Army and for any military service, because I assume there's the same on for the Navy and what have you, but also from a female perspective, as this has been a great career opportunity for you, but it's probably not one many school counselors talk about, or even people would shy away from because they think they're in the military.
Yeah, kind of interesting, right? So I'll kind of go to the middle to talk about that part, right? But I call it life's great irony that I didn't get my first real job working for the Army till my husband had separated from service and we moved home to Michigan, right? So I spent a good portion of my career working for the non-profit American Red Cross, which was a wonderful experience and very portable, right? For a military spouse, you'll find Red Cross offices all over the world. So how did I get back here? And I wouldn't have known really or probably thought much about civil service until I kind of got back and went like, oh yeah, there's some opportunities here in Detroit still. I should see what they have going on. I think things are changing a little bit though. So one of the things that the federal government is doing is they're really doing a lot of reach out now through what they call their Pathways program. And it's really designed for folks who have recently graduated from college to come and join and look at civil service opportunities. And, we collectively, the Detroit military community, are really making a concerted effort to reach out through all like the social media platforms and in different ways and make sure that this next generation of workforce coming up knows and understands the opportunities that are available to them. Has the chance to consider civil service as something that they're able to do in the future.
Well, it's really important in workforce development that people get exposed to it, because how can they make a choice that I'd be interested in doing this if I've never been exposed to it? So right. That's why we really appreciate you coming on Veterans Radio to talk about your civil service here. But also I want to transition a little bit to this broader issue, which is the group, but it really is the concept, right? Women in Defense, and there's a Michigan chapter. And as you're the immediate past president of that group, tell us a little bit about Women in Defense.
So WID, as we lovingly refer to it, really is kind of based on a number of core principles or goals that we want to achieve. And one, it's creating great women leaders in the defense space. So we make sure to offer opportunities to help women grow and learn and try to tailor our events and our training opportunities around those pieces. The second piece that we're wild about is building strong networks, right? So even as you talked about when we first joined up today, we're here today because my network is strong and one of my battle buddies, Kate Melcher over there at Fisher House, Michigan, said, you need to talk to Jim. And she said to you, you need to talk to Carrie. And so here we are, right?
Exactly.
So, right. And that, you know, the, there's so much power in the network. And there's, you know, for us, we see women in defense, so much joy in helping each other out, right? And using that network for our good superpowers, that it's hard to beat that. And then the last piece that we do at Women in Defense is we really want to give back. So, you'll see we have a golf outing coming up at, in July that we, raise money for scholarship, and we've given over $160,000 worth of scholarships since we started our program. We give out annual awards every year, our Horizon Industry Awards and our Excellence in Leadership Awards, to really call out and draw attention to, you know, folks who are doing great things, women who are doing great things in the defense space. And then we give back through mentorship. So we have a very robust mentorship program where we usually put about 20 sets of proteges and mentors together, and just help help people have broader experiences, right? Really connect people across our defense space. I think what's really neat about Women in Defense too is our membership is, you know, a lot of women and a lot of men. And it's a really broad set of folks who want to support the military community. So while you'll see some of the, I'll call it the usual suspects, right? Like those of us who are work for Department of Defense or folks who work for big, you know, big contractors, you'll see we have a lot of bankers and realtors and folks who provide support to our military community who want to be part of our network and help build things. So it's really great to see.
Well, and there's programming that you're involved with at WID. One of them is to support STEM. And again, we're in talking about here's, yes, you know, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And if you don't expose kids, if you don't expose young girls to these career paths, they don't know they exist. Talk a little bit about some of the programming.
Oh my gosh, just thanks for calling out STEM, because this year was a banner year for our STEM program. Last year, Darhan Sanders, our STEM director, had the great idea of, you know, trying to morph ourselves, of course, to a virtual COVID reality. We mailed out STEM kits for all of the kids who signed up for our STEM program this year, and then held a Zoom call where we put the kits together as a group and had you know, folks on board to help, you know, help people with any problems they were having. And we did a STEM project together in our virtual world. And we had such great turnout for that event last year. Well, this year, the team upped the ante completely. And, you know, there's, I always call it the silver linings, right, of COVID, right? The things that we learn from and grow from and do better on. We partnered this year with the WID chapters both in Arizona and the WID chapter in Boston, and we were able to expand that STEM event where kids from across the country came together with the leadership and support from all of the three WID chapters to do a STEM event. You know, and like you said, it's we need to help everyone see themselves in that space, right? I'll say as a woman who works in the defense industry, especially women in leadership, sometimes I'm one of the few women in the room, right? So we need to give folks the opportunity to see women in that space and to see them doing well in that space, right? Or to try new things and take some risks in that space, to know that they have the opportunity to do so as well.
Well, and always in an organization like WID, you're going to connect with folks and create some mentorship relationships, or at least somebody you feel like, hey, I'm going to call up and I'm thinking about this career move or this piece of education to add to my career. Boy, I'd like to talk to somebody who's been through it before, and this is the place to find such women who have made their way into the defense industry, isn't it?
Yeah, no doubt at all. I always laugh because, you know, it's funny, some of the old stereotypes that still sit around, like people like, oh, a bunch of women, how catty. You know, like, in particular for WID, you know, the support of this group is just amazing. And the first time that you say, I need help with, out of your mouth, when you engage with the WID tribe, there's 10 people doing the, what can I do to help? Or here's how I can help you. Or it's a joy to see, right? That getting that network together and creating that, like you said, safe space to dialogue and try out new ideas and learn things. That's, you know, it's just a great community we've created.
Well, I also got a kick out of the one of the events just occurred, the Kentucky Derby event. So if you think this is just a bunch of stuffy old defense women, I assure you they had some fun both at the Kentucky Derby event, the upcoming golf outing event, and
You can find us on both Facebook and on LinkedIn if you want to take some looks at the fabulous hats that we found.
Well, you have to for the Derby. It's required. How do people find the WID Michigan chapter if they say, geez, that may be something I'd be interested in participating with?
Yeah, so our web address, if you want to find us online, is WID-MI for Michigan.org. The national organization, if you're not in Michigan and you're interested, if there's a chapter that you can connect with, is womenindefense.net, and that will still lead you back to the Michigan chapter as well if you want to look for us that way. And then, like I said, you can find us out on social media profiles with Women in Defense Michigan.
And there are chapters all over the country. You've mentioned a couple. But maybe talk about that broader network, too, because you now find yourself down in Virginia. And in a maybe a different role for a WID local chapter.
Yeah, you know, so WID National, has one a large chapter that's here in the greater DC area, but the WID National organization also, has a lot of programs that they offer as well. And one of the great things for us is our vice president, Sue Tellier, is very active on a number of the committees that the national organization has, as well as our director of scholarship, Maura Rylander, who is active in helping with the national level scholarships. So, you're able to connect that way with the local chapters, but also help, feed the greater Women in Defense organization and kind of, keeping us all aligned with our values and our goals.
So if you were maybe a young woman coming out of college or otherwise, and you're thinking, I would like to work somewhere in the defense space, I don't even know how I would go about looking for a job or connecting in that to see what opportunities might exist. Carrie Mead, do you have any advice for people?
Yeah, I know. So the first thing I would say is this is, the federal government hires using a tool called USA Jobs. So if you go to usajobs.gov and type in where you live and see what comes up, right? There's opportunity, of course, to find a lot of those defense related jobs in that area, but you'd probably be surprised at the breadth and variety of things that the federal government offers. If you're looking potentially at that life of service. In particular, in defense, right, if you're local in a defense community or there's a strong defense community, you're probably going to hone in a little bit on, companies that are nearby. I'll say, interesting for Michigan, the Michigan Defense Center did a study a couple years back as they were looking at their protect and grow strategy and mapped out all of the businesses in Michigan in particular that do business with defense, either directly or as a sub of a sub, right, for some sort of contract. And they hit pretty much every county in the state of Michigan. So the reach and the touch of defense in Michigan and across, across the country is really, really, really broad. So
it is.
I would check out those tools. And then, of course, if you're close to a WID chapter, I would definitely, reach out to WID because, like I said, part of what we do is build our network, which gives you access to, the chance to talk with people about what you're looking at and then meet people who can help you navigate the path that you choose.
We're talking to Carrie Mead, who's the acting chief of staff at Joint Base Meyer-Henderson Hall. Carrie, as we come to a close here, you and I were talking before we got started about what you get to view out your window. Why don't you give our veteran radio listeners a little insight into that look that you have every day at work down there?
Yeah, no, thanks, Jim. What I've been given, or the gift that I've been given right now in doing this detail, is I look out over Arlington National Cemetery from my office window, and I was telling Jim when we started that hey, there's a funeral coming out of the old post chapel right now, getting ready to make its way into the cemetery. and I'm on the lane where the caissons from the old guard come through and help deliver our veterans and soldiers who've passed on or are being moved to the cemetery, go by every single day. And, you know, it reminds me, I was saying, it reminds me to be grateful and really, you know, have a lot of gratitude for the service and the sacrifices that many men and women in our country have made to, you know, keep our nation great. So, you know, it's been a great pleasure to be able to be offered this opportunity to be here and be reminded so visually every day of why we do these things and why, you know, why we want to take care of our soldiers and our families.
Yeah, it's such important work. Thanks for sharing that. Carrie Mead, thanks for taking a little time today to talk to Veterans Radio.
It's been a joy. Thanks, Jim.
Those of us who've been in the service and are called veterans don't often stop long enough to think about those civilians who are so critical to the work that the military and the uniformed services do. So I'm glad to bring you Carrie Mead. Hopefully you also learned some things on your VA loan and maybe some opportunities in the future that you can use with that loan, even in these challenging times and environments. It's the summer season. If you get a chance, get out and mix it up with some other veterans. Get to one of these vet fests. We just had a great one in Washtenaw County. We've got one coming up in Livingston County, another coming up in Roscommon. There's probably coming up in your area too. So get out and enjoy that. Dale will be back soon from recovering from his hip surgery. And we're glad that you're checking in with VeteransRadio.net. Check us out on Facebook. And as always, when we're back again next time, we'll have interesting stories for you that maybe you haven't heard. You always learn something. If you miss a portion of the program and you want to go back, go to VeteransRadio.net. We post all these things on our podcast site. We post brand new podcasts every Tuesday, so you can check those out as well as listening to the Sunday program. If it's Sunday in your area, maybe across the country, maybe it's some other time of the day. But we really do appreciate all that our veterans have done for us, and we're glad to be able to bring you this program every week. And until next time, you are dismissed.